gentrifying stabilizer states. This is work with Scott Aronson. Not written up yet, but I guess since it's being recorded, hopefully you'll be able to read the blackboards on the recording, which is not at all certain. But this is your only opportunity to find out, I suppose. Okay, so the idea here is obviously if we have just a general quantum state of n qubits, we can't hope to figure out exactly what it is, or even what it is to very high fidelity in polynomial number of trials. You know, given a polynomial of copies, and or using polynomial amount of classical communication. But if we have restricted enough class of states, then maybe we can do it. And it turns out that stabilizer states are such a class, where we need only polynomial number of copies of the state, and only a polynomial amount of classical computation, and you know, quantum steps as well, to actually figure out exactly what the state is. Now, obviously, that wouldn't be interesting if it were a really kind of uninteresting class of states, like you know, classical bit strings. Right? Then it's very easy. You just measure the classical bit string. You only need one copy. It tells you what it is. But stabilizer states are moderately interesting as quantum states. They include entangled, very entangled quantum states, like EPR pairs, and you know, states that are useful for quantum error correcting codes and stuff like that. So I don't have a concrete application of this procedure, but maybe somebody can find one somewhere. So anyway, what is a stabilizer state? Okay, so to do that, I first wanted to find the Pauli group. And I write that as P sub n on n qubits. And that's formed of tensor products of the identity x, which is just a bit flip, y, which is this combined bit and phase flip, and z, which is the phase flip. Okay? And if you take tensor products of these on n qubits, then you get 4 to the n possible elements. It doesn't form a group yet because, well, x and z anti-commute, so xz is equal to minus zx. So xz, xz is equal to minus the identity. So we should also throw in minus the identity. And similarly, since y has these i's in it, we should throw in a phase I. So we have the overall phase plus or minus 1 plus or minus I. Okay? But then once you do that, it is closed as a group. You take any product of these, you get another thing of that form. And it has some very nice properties as a group. I won't get into all of them, but some of them will show up during the course of the talk. So let's see. So a stabilizer then is, sorry, I'm going to go to maximal, but I don't want to do that yet. Stabilizer is an abelian subgroup of the Pauli group that doesn't contain the minus 1. I felt like Robin wanted to ask a question, but no, OK. I don't know. I just heard some sound over here that sounded like Robin was wanting to say. OK, OK. Mistake. OK. So an abelian subgroup of the Pauli group that doesn't contain minus the identity. And the idea here is that given such a stabilizer, we can define a subspace of the Hilbert space of states that have plus one eigenvalue for everything in the stabilizer. So we need this condition, that it doesn't contain minus the identity, because otherwise, obviously, we can't find states that have plus one eigenvalue for minus one. And it needs to be abelian, because the state's supposed to be a simultaneous eigenvector of everything in the stabilizer. So if we have two things that anti-commute instead of commuting, which is the only options in this Pauli group, well, they can't have a simultaneous eigenvector. Okay. So in order to have simultaneous eigenvectors at all, again, it needs to be abelian. So given these conditions, it turns out that there are, in fact, a big subspace of things. Well, whether it's big or not depends on how big the subgroup is. And in particular, a stabilizer S with 2 to the r elements, and all of these stabilizers have a power of 2 elements, defines a subspace of dimension 2 to the n minus r. Okay. Maybe I go to the other board. So the subspace associated with x, with s, is, as I said before, the set containing the set of state psi, where m psi is equal to psi for all m and s, right? So the states that are plus one, simultaneous plus one eigenvectors of everything in the stabilizer. Okay? And you'll notice that in the event that the stabilizer S has 2 to the n elements, then the subspace becomes zero dimensional, which means it's a single state. Sorry, one dimensional, 2 to the 0, 0 qubits. So this is a stabilizer state. And well, so maybe you can see already why I'm interested in them. I mean, in terms of identifying them, why it's something that you can hope to identify. Because in order to describe the stabilizer state, all you have to do is give the stabilizer, right? And the stabilizer, well, OK, that might sound like a big deal, because the stabilizer now has 2 to the n elements, which is a lot of elements. But because it has this very simple group structure, it's an abelian subgroup of the Pauli group, we can describe the stabilizer state by giving the generators of the stabilizer. And a stabilizer of size 2 to the r has r generators. Okay? And each generator is itself a product of n Pauli elements, I, x, y, or z, with an overall phase. Okay? So you only need about 2n bits to describe each generator. Right? So to describe a single stabilizer state, you need about n squared bits. And of course, there's these additional constraints. You can't just pick any n squared values of these bits, because the generators have to commute. But it turns out that that's still roughly right. Turns out it's about n squared over 2. Sorry, I heard a sound again. Is that a question? Okay. Are there questions? Okay, so probably a lot of people have seen this before. The idea is that since these are states that can be efficiently described, well, we can at least hope that they can be efficiently identified. Somebody gives us one copy of a stabilizer state, well, that's not going to be enough, right? Because that only has n qubits in it. And we need about n squared bits to even just to identify the state. And out of n qubits, we can only get n bits of information. But if we have a number of copies, maybe as few as n copies of the stabilizer state, maybe that itself provides enough to identify exactly what state it is. And it turns out it might, depending on exactly what the rules are of what you're allowed to do. But the main question is it a polynomial number of copies that we need? Okay. So another thing we can do with a stabilizer, particularly a maximal stabilizer with n generators, is we can use it to define a measurement. Okay? So, oh, sorry. Actually, before I do that, I want to. First, I want to point out maybe the first attempt you might do to identify a stabilizer state. So the first thing you might say is, well, this stabilizer has 2 to the n elements. So why don't I try to measure some element of the Pauli group and see if it's in the stabilizer, right? Because if it's in the stabilizer, well, it'll have some definite eigenvalue. So now I want to be maybe a little cavalier. If it's actually in the stabilizer and we're given the stabilizer state, then it should have eigenvalue plus 1. But of course, we might have been slightly wrong in our guess. We might have guessed minus p instead of p, right? In that case, it'll have minus eigenvalue minus 1. But the point is, it'll have a consistent eigenvalue. If so, if we measure p repeatedly. We'll always get the same answer. Okay, so this seems like maybe a hopeful route, that if we can guess an element that's in the stabilizer and then measure it on some number of copies, we always get the same answer. That's not very likely to happen just randomly. So that means that if p is in the stabilizer, we can identify it. And in particular, if none of these things is true, so if p is not in the stabilizer with any phase, then the measurement outcome is random. And I mean by that uniformly random. So it's a bit that could be 0, 1 with equal probability. Yeah. Right. So because I'm classifying these two cases into the case where one of these things with a phase is in S and one of them is not in S, basically, I don't really need to choose both plus P and minus P, right? Since I'm just looking whether the eigenvalue is consistent or different, it's enough just to do that. So from now on, I'll basically ignore these phases. And I'll say P is in S kind of as a shorthand for one of these things is in S. And P is not in S for one of these things is in S. And then I'll choose whichever one of these four possibilities is most convenient. OK? OK, so again, if we can guess a p that's in the stabilizer, we can check that pretty efficiently. Okay, that's a good start. But unfortunately, if we just measure a single, just if we have no information about what the stabilizer is, well, we have not a good way to guess what p is. In fact, if we just pick p at random, that's just as good as anything else, because we have no idea what the stabilizer is. It turns out that our chance of being in the stabilizer is pretty bad. Because how many elements are there in the stabilizer? There's 2 to the n. And there's 4 to the n in the Pauli group. Okay? So that means that our probability of getting 1 is about 2 to the minus n. So it turns out this is not quite right, because the identity is always in the stabilizer and it's always in the Pauli group, so we should really be doing minus 1 here. Oh, so yeah, so I've now restricted to the case where we have a stabilizer state, and so r is equal to n. But you're right. So if we had r, then this would be 2 to the r minus 1, and our odds would be even worse. But we're just thinking about a single state, not a subspace. So this is roughly 2 to the minus n is the prob of choosing s. Sorry. P and S. Okay? So if we just do this, we choose a random poly, see if it's in the stabilizer or not, and then if it doesn't work, we choose another random poly. That's not going to work, because the odds of finding one are so low that we'll have to try exponentially many times before we manage to get one. And in fact, we're getting so little information from guessing wrong that we can't even really improve our guessing at the next stage. Yeah. But we don't know the stabilizer generators. That's the point. We're given a stabilizer state. We don't know anything about it except that it is a stabilizer state. If we knew the stabilizer generators, we'd know the state. So that's what we're trying to figure out.
But there are certain, you know, so there are certain finite number of stabilizer generators, you know, there's certain abelian group that are in Pauli group.
The stabilizer has n generators for this particular stabilizer state. But there are multiple choices of generators for the same group. And they all define the same state. Why don't I give an example? Let's see, there we go. So here's a very simple stabilizer. Well, here's a very simple stabilizer. So it's generated by x tensor I and I tensor x. So it's a 2-qubit stabilizer. Okay? So what this state is, plus 1 eigenvalue of x tensor I and I tensor x, is the state plus plus, 0 plus 1, 0 plus 1. Okay? Because it's an eigenvalue under bit flip of the first qubit and bit flip of the second qubit. But the actual root contains 4 elements. It's I tensor I, so it's always in it. These 2 things, the generators, and also the product, x tensor x, is in it. Right? Because if you take the bit flip on both of these, that's still, again, plus plus. And so we could pick another set of generators. For instance, we could do x tensor x and I tensor x. And that generates the same group. Okay. I mean, if we can identify exactly this set of generators, that's great, but we don't need that. We just need some set of generators that defines the group. But since we don't know to start with what this thing is at all, we have to do some more.
Maybe I'm not getting the whole what is the task that we are trying to do. Is it we are given a state and we want to see if it is a stabilizer or a state? That's
No. Yeah, let me write it somewhere. Okay. Given psi,
psi in the stabilizer state, but we don't know anything else about it. We want to find S.
Oh, okay. So sorry.
With okay.
Are you given copies? I'm sorry.
You want to say they're given copies of something?
Yes. M copies.
So
and the question is how big M has to be in order to allow us to do this.
Okay, so the whole task is just finding the set of generators.
And that will tell us what psi is, that will tell us what whole group is. But it can be any set of groups because there's multiple possible choices. Yeah.
Again, this goes to the question I think I asked yesterday. I'm a little confused about how many elements are in the Pauli group.
It's
40
so,
n plus 1 because of these phases.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't change your scheme, but is it also true of this?
Yeah, well, because again, I'm ignoring these phases because, you know, all of it, we treat the four things as the same, we can lose that factor of 4 from this probability calculation. Other questions? Okay. So the next task is to try to figure out something better. And to do that, I'll do the thing I almost started to say, which is something else we can do with a stabilizer. And a maximal stabilizer defines a measurement basis.
A maximal stabilizer is R equals M?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I guess I didn't say that. So you can kind of see it kind of implicit in what I said here, but the biggest possible abelian subgroup you can have in the Pauli group, it has 2 to the n elements and generators. And it's kind of implicit here because otherwise it would define a subspace of dimension 2 to the minus 1, which I hope you agree is not likely. Basically, it's just that's the maximum number of elements you can have that all commute with each other. So how is a maximal stabilizer defined a measurement basis? Well, each generator is a Pauli, so we can measure its eigenvalue. And we get plus or minus 1 as an output, right? And there's n generators. So we have 2 to the n possible outputs. So it's not just a measurement. This is a complete measurement that breaks down the whole space into one-dimensional subspaces. And each of those subspaces is, in fact, a stabilizer state, right? It's a stabilizer state with this original stabilizer with different eigenvalues for the generators. So for instance, So for example, if you look at the stabilizer generated by x tensor x and z tensor z, this corresponds to a Bell measurement. Okay, we're measuring. Well, yeah, this is just a Bell measurement. Okay, and then the four stabilizer states it corresponds to are the things with this stabilizer, the thing with minus xx zz. Plus xx minus cz and minus xx minus cz. And those are the four Bell states, if you work out the math.
Daniel,
yeah?
What can you need them?
All right.
Oh,
OK. I mean, I started a little late because of the erasing and stuff. But I can, yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to the main part yet, but I'm almost there. So it turns out that if we do a full measurement like this, that's much better than doing single Pauli measurements. And in particular, it turns out that if we So why is it much better? Well, the thing is that if you measure two stabilizers, sorry, so if you take, no, so that's all right. If you measure in a stabilizer basis, for a stabilizer state, then while you're kind of measuring lots of polys all at once, right? And so you have kind of 2 to the n chances to be right up here, which is good because the probability of being wrong is about 2 to the minus n. And so it turns out so if you choose a random stabilizer, what letter am I using? T. And again, this will be a maximum stabilizer. Then the probability that S intersect T is non-trivial is at least 1/3. Okay, so there's some constant probability, no matter how big n is, that if you pick a random stabilizer, that it'll have some polys in it, not the identity, that are also in the stabilizer of the state that you're interested in. Okay? And so if you pick this random stabilizer and do the appropriate measurement, you'll find out that with a pretty good chance, you've gotten some poly that's going to have a consistent eigentype. Okay? And so that's basically what we're going to do. We're going to pick a random poly and try to figure out if there's some poly that has a consistent eigenvalue. And if so, we know it's in the original stabilizer. And then we can just repeat this process until we have a full list of elements that will generate the original stabilizer. Yeah?
It does depend on n.
It does depend on n, but it's always at least a third.
So how does it depend with the number? So if you take the number of copies n,
I could say this 1/3. I don't know how tight that bound is, but all I need is a constant.
But do they become orthogonal strictly at some point for some n?
Well, they never become strictly orthogonal because each of the states. I mean, you know, if psi and psi prime are stabilized non-orthogonal stabilizer states, then psi tensor M is never orthogonal to psi prime tensor M. They become very close to orthogonal, of course. But nevertheless, I mean, so in principle, information theoretically, there's a way to do it. The question is, can you do this with polynomial, you know, processing and measurements and operations? Yeah.
And it's worth noting that for any n, given any stabilizer state, there are a lot of other stabilizer states that have overlap 1/2 with it. They don't get far apart.
Well, they do. I mean, there's some things that have 1/2. There's some things that have one actually overlap 1/2. And then 1/√2 to some power. But that's a side note.
How are you?
Sorry. What's the strategy? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. But another question?
So I'm not sure if I understand this, why this is greater than 1/3. Do you have a short explanation why that's? I have no intuition why you
get that. Yeah, so the short intuition is that this is kind of a birthday paradox argument. That's not quite right. You can't quite use the birthday paradox argument. But you know the birthday paradox? It says if you have a room of n people, how many people do you need that two of them have the same birthday?
Carol did this earlier.
Oh, okay, good.
Ready for you.
Great. So here we have 4 to the n polys, and we want to know how many we need to pick in a random set so that two of them, well, that's not quite right. So we have two random subsets of polys, S and T. They're not totally random, unfortunately. This is why the argument doesn't quite work. But S is size 2 to the n, and T is size 2 to the n. So if we look at the number of overlaps between them, there's about 2 to the n times 2 to the n.
Okay, yeah.
So the odds are pretty good that there's one thing that's in both.
I think the birthday paradox is not relevant here because birthday paradox allows us to choose any two people from the room, right? And here S is already defined.
So that actually doesn't hurt. The main problem is that S and T are not random. They have to be a billion subgroups. So they're structured. That's actually the biggest problem. It's not exactly, you're right. It wouldn't even be exactly birthday paradox without that, but it would be much closer.
They have some structure, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it requires some separate proof, but it's not terribly hard. But I'll skip it because you know,
I can.
We're already running out of time.
It sounded really good when you said it. I wonder if you could repeat it more slowly. The reason for this extra, the reason why this goes to a constant, you said, okay, you know that if you pick p at random, you got a 2 to the minus n. Then what was the argument for why?
Oh, well, there's 2 to the, you've got, you pick t and has 2 to the n elements.
Yeah.
And each one of them has a probability 2 to the minus n of being, so again, they're not independent, so it's not a rigorous argument, but that's basically how the birthday paradox argument works.
Right.
That there's 2 to the n things, each of them has probably 2 to the minus n of being in there, so it seems a pretty good chance that one of them is going to be in.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Actually, I'll just use this one. Okay, so here's the algorithm. So we initialize we already know the identities. So R is going to be our running tally of what's in the stabilizer S. And so while R generates not a full stabilizer, not a maximal stabilizer, we should do the following steps. So we choose a random basis to measure in. And we might as well pick one that contains R, since we already know that's in the stabilizer. And then what we do is we measure some number of copies of S in the basis T. So we'll call that big R.
Huh?
Huh?
You're using big R represents copies.
No, so we measure this basis on this, we measure the stabilizer state in this basis T, but we do it more than once.
It looks like you have 2 big R's.
Oh, good point. So in my notes I use little R, but I've already used that. So let's call this S, little S. No, that's too confusing.
U.
Not a new K.
K, I like K. We'll measure K copies. And third step is going to be to determine if S intersect T is, bigger than R, and find S intersect T. And then step 4 is to add any new elements of S intersect T to R. And that's the end. So we repeat these steps. Okay? Now, if I have another minute, I can say how to do this part. This is the only part that's left over. But the upshot here is we're choosing this random measurement basis with some constant probability it has an intersection with S. When we do this measurement, the problem is that there are 2 to the n elements of T, right? So if we just measure once, or twice, say, well, some things will just randomly get the same eigenvalue. Okay? But if you measure enough times, so this k, it turns out, has to be order n, then the probability of getting the same thing over and over again decreases exponentially with k. And eventually, it becomes very unlikely that we're getting the same eigenvalue over and over again, unless it really is in the intersection. Okay? And then we have to do some classical processing, because we're only getting the eigenvalues of the generators. We have to do some classical processing to find out what this intersection is, because it might not be one of the generators in the way we represent T. Okay? And then we can just add it to R and repeat. Okay. That's a race. Thanks. Okay. So let's do step three in more detail. So it turns out you can just do linear algebra. So we'll let Vi be the vector of eigenvalues I guess actually I want them to be 0 and 1, so it's not actually the eigenvalues, but the log of the eigenvalue. Kind of the eigenvalues are plus or minus 1. The vector of eigenvalues from the ith measurement. So this is a vector of size n, right, because there's n generators. And so we're getting n bits out. And then we make the matrix V whose rows are V1 plus VI. So this is just saying whether we're comparing to the first measurement to see whether the eigenvalues are the same or not. And if there's some linear combination that's the same, that's another element of the Pauli group that has the same eigenvalue. And so all we have to do is identify whether there's something that's repeatedly the same. And what that is to find the kernel of V. So that's vectors W with VW equals 0. Okay? Okay. Well, I'm pretty much finished here. So, if we find these elements that are annihilated by V, those will correspond to things of an S intersect T. Okay. Meaning that this is going to be a vector like 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0. And that means that we take the element as the product of the second generator and the third generator. Right, wherever we have the ones. And that gives us an element of the Pauli group that's in S intersect T, and we can stick it into R on step four. And that's the algorithm. I'm sorry I didn't have time to explain it a little more carefully. But since these things are all linear algebra, they can be done in polynomial time, since these are n by k matrices. Okay.